welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never, folks. And that debt is fraud. And I'm going to go down a rat hole when I come back to that fraudulent debt. But if you want to join in and join the Loudoun Liberty Prayer Circle or create your own, as I say, use your faith as the tool. It is a very effective tool. And I would just say learn, pray, and act. Okay, now this is going to be probably my last week of plugging Timber Nation. So if you're looking for solid, hardwood walnut, cherry, maple, as a matter of fact, if you go on their website, they'll show you this tiger stripe maple that they get this effect because of the way they cut it. And it's a very hot selling item, and it's a very beautiful wood. Go check it out if you're looking for good quality hardwood. Now, whether they can get it to you for Christmas or not, 9 times out of 10, if you really want it, and when you look at the pricing, I don't think you're going to be able to get that work done in your local area. Now, if you do, then that's great because you probably live in an area where there's just that much competition. Where, you know, the supply is greater than the demand. But, and as a matter of fact, I had an interesting conversation that, you know, there's a good chance that, because I was looking at with Biden's policies, and if Kamala Harris won, then I believe that they would have continually combated and basically started, are continue to adversely affect the different market spaces from, you know, construction and these types of things to where we were actually going to hit, you know, a true recession, if not a depression. And I mean, a real bad one where all of a sudden people don't have work, because I happen to live in an area where there's an abundance of work for certain market spaces. And so I believe that Trump is going to kind of change things and more market spaces are going to come back online. But that is what it is. What's more important is that we get a constitutional president out of this next presidency, because that actually gives us long-term hope. But anyway, welcome back, Tammy.
Thank you.
And I'm going to circle back around because they weren't here regarding our conversation regarding that debt being fraud. And actually, the debt being fraud is a myopic point. And we bring that point up, or I bring that point up to you, the listener, the audience, so that you start putting direct context to the magnitude of the problem. Because that's only on the financial side. They've spent all of this money to basically bankrupt America. And they're continuing to do this. Now, Trump spent trillions of dollars on the infrastructure and other things. I mean, remember, I think it was warp speed when he spent billions of dollars and gave the pharmaceutical companies this immunity from prosecution. I mean, that was really great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. But we can't speak evil about evil, at least if the evil comes from our side of the fence, right?
Yeah.
And evil is evil, folks. We need to hold everybody accountable. If you are basically saying we don't care about what happens on our side of the fence, we want to excoriate them on their side of the fence, there's a word for that. And I think it starts with an H. Hypocrite. Anyway, so we were just talking about, because you shared with me this, what was it, chain of title or something like that. And so there's a lot of people like this that are out there getting people to buy into a process so that they can protect themselves, so they can do something for themselves. And what all of these people are doing, whether it's Anna Von Ritz, whether it's these general assemblies, it doesn't matter. All of these different organizations that are out there knocking on your door and trying to get you to become a state national, try to get out of the system, abandon it, walk away. You can do these things. You can actually spend this money and go through court and become, you know, a sovereign citizen. You can go through court and actually get your the real deed to your property. The reality is this, folks, that debt is fraud, and this government and these games that they've created, or what we think that, you know, we're actually there, they own us, we're slaves, we're chattel, they have a title to us, and they're leveraging us as debt, they're leveraging our land as debt, and so forth. The reality is that that is all fraud. They had no authority to do these things to us, none. And the people that want you to actually go out and get your property, I'll bet you anything they're selling you a book. Every single one of these folks, every person I've talked to, oh, well, I'm not selling you a book, but if you give me a $50 donation, I'll give you the book. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. What's the difference? In other words, people have recognized that they can make money on exposing the scam of this fraud that's been created. But instead of actually doing what is necessary, what they're doing is they're self-serving themselves as opportunists trying to actually make money. Now, I know people that do this for free and don't sell anything. And people hate those guys, because those guys are real, what we would call ideologues. They're really doing it because they really believe that what they're talking about is real. Now, every time I've had these conversations with any of these types of people, not one, now I'm batting 1,000 here, folks, which means I'm perfect on this. Not one person can academically show me where the authority began constitutionally, where the Constitution had been amended in giving the federal government and the players, the presidents and the Congress and the judiciary, the authority and power to do a vast array of all of the things that they're doing and that they have done. The fact is this, you can find people telling you of the dirty deeds and this sham of a game that they've created in playing, you know, the hiding the card, hiding the nut under the cup, whatever game it is that you want to use for a metaphor. But it's a game. They're doing this, and this is a real game because they actually have guns and they can actually invoke very bad things and do bad things to you. But the reality is they don't have the constitutional, legally legitimate authority to do these things. And the only way out of this is, you know, yeah, you can go and take care of yourself, and then you're worthless. You become an island. And all of these little islands out there are all vulnerable, because when everybody gets pinned, or I should say, when all of a sudden they take over, and they go, oh, by the way, we've got all of these outliers out there, and these people, you know, took their land back. At least they thought they could take their land back.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what we're going to do is, instead of playing a paper game, we're going to play a bullet game. And we're going to dig a trench, and we're going to basically do what the Khmer Rouge did, because I love Pol Pot. I try to aspire to him, and we're going to kill everybody. Or just get rid of you. You just go away.
Yeah.
And so, folks, the reason why we are spending...
Kind of like putting a flag on your back, right?
Oh, absolutely. Whatever you think makes you comfortable, you have not done what is necessary to secure our future. Our future. This is a union. This is multiple states, one state to many, one state to 49. That's the current ratio. 1 to 49. In other words, when a state joins the union today, it would be that one state adjoining to the 50. It would be 1 to 50. In other words, they've basically created an agreement with 50 separate states, separate agreements that I, too, will join you, and I, too, will join you and you and you as a part of this union. So we're all, as citizens, responsible by our birthright and by the intent of the law, we're all responsible of protecting and supporting and defending that Constitution. And why this is actually what we're going through with Madison's report, what we covered already is Thomas Jefferson's Kentucky Resolutions of 1798, the Virginia Resolutions of 1798, and then Thomas Jefferson's Kentucky Resolution 1799, and now we're in Madison's report. In this report, Madison spells out the importance of understanding the Constitution and where the power truly lies. And one of the things we just covered, and so that was just yesterday, we just covered this whole point that Madison brought up in paragraph 14, that when we really look at the Constitution, when it was ratified, it was sold in very specific detail that they could not do anything that was not enumerated on that. And I want to highlight this one point. The committee themselves, the committee satisfied themselves here with briefly remarking that in all the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, and what he's talking about right there, the Constitution, in all of these different conversations and discussions, he's talking about the ratification debates. How, you know, he basically is pointing that the committee satisfied themselves here with briefly remarking that he's going to go on to this little aside and say that in all the discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, it was constantly justified and recommended on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it. And then he goes into, he calls it the 12th Amendment, but he goes into the 10th Amendment that galvanized that in the Constitution, that if they don't have the power to do it, they can't do it. Okay, now with this one paragraph, show me what these charlatans are doing is legitimate. What they're actually doing, what Anna von Ritz and all of these other people, because I could start listing everybody, what all of them are doing is they're out there trying to convince you that what the government has done is legitimate. When Madison is saying, no, they can't do anything that is not enumerated. If they do and you buy into it, you're the fool. So how many fools are out there? And to me, these fools are opportunists. All they're doing is they're trying to buy a book, trying to sell you a class. They're trying to get a little bit, you know, a stipend out of you and everybody else because, hey, you know, this is the goose that lays the golden egg. The problem that government has created, everybody wants a piece of that to make some money. When reality, folks, all we have to do is join together. If you look at this process, nobody gets rich. If you look at interposition and holding our public servants accountable by using petitions and actually going in front of the government, this is not an organization where you have to pay, you know, to be a member $50 a year for the John Birch Society, and this is how we get our government back. That is not the path at all. Those types of organizations cannot do it because they're not going to do it. The day they solve the problem, the day they evaporate.
Yeah, true.
So the reality is if you actually understand that you're digging and the day you reach payday is the day, one, either you're going to die or everything ends, right? I mean, let's say the guy that's holding the gun behind you is saying, dig, dig, dig. And you know as soon as you reach the end, they're basically going to kill you and bury you in that hole you dug. Why would you do something like that? You know, the best thing to do is actually do what is necessary. I understand the government is holding a gun, but they're not actually over us making us all dig our own graves. We actually have, right now, we still have the power, the time to actually interpose by holding your public servants accountable. And I'm telling you, folks, we've got a lot of good public servants out there that can be flipped. So, as we go into this next paragraph, And what we didn't get is we didn't finish. We didn't actually finish the last part of 14. We kind of stopped in the middle of it because as we were talking about the 12th Amendment that Madison references, I was pointing out that that was actually the 10th Amendment, and it kind of kept us from finishing. So, Tammy, why don't you go ahead and just cover the last part of 14 so that we can get all of the red covered, because we didn't actually do that. And then we can dive into the 15th paragraph. Go ahead.
Hey, where?
So where I left off, the power is not given to the government or withheld from it, semicolon. And that, so that's where you pick up on paragraph 14.
Still looking.
Okay, so.
Let's see.
So if you, well, let's go ahead and pick it up from the beginning. Let's just cover the whole 14.
Right.
Yeah.
Clear as the position must seem, that the federal powers are derived from the Constitution, and from that alone, the committee are not unapprised of a late doctrine which opens another source of federal powers, not less extensive and important that it is new and unexpected. The examination of this doctrine will be most conveniently connected with the review of a succeeding resolution. The committee satisfy themselves here with briefly remarking that in all the contemporary discussions and comments which the Constitution underwent, it was constantly justified and recommended on the ground that the powers not given to the government were withheld from it. And that, if any doubt could have existed on this subject under the original text of the Constitution, it is removed, as far as words could remove it, by the 12th Amendment, now a part of the Constitution, which expressly declares that the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people.
Okay, and that last line. We need to reassert. Okay, so I'm sorry. That last line is what I put in. Never mind. You don't see it. Okay.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't see anything.
Okay, so and the reason I put that there is I just wanted to make sure when we covered today that we reassert how important that is, because folks, he's pointing to the ratification debates. When you look at the Constitution, the Constitution does not create its own law. It actually was created under the umbrella of contract law, a fundamental law system that has been created and has been accepted in almost, when you go into any nation, almost the way almost all nations view and enforce contract law is the same. I mean, there are corrupt nations that play games with contracts. But you could be in a common law state, you could be in a civil law government, and they still treat the contracts the same. How that contract was stipulated is how it must be enforced and how it must be abided by that subcontractor created out of that contract, that creature that was created out of the contract, i.e. the federal government has to stay within those bounds. The powers not delegated, they cannot exercise legitimately. Not that they aren't exercising illegitimate powers, but they can't do it legitimately. And if you believe in the fact that, oh, well, this is all legitimate, then you have bought the greatest lie. As, you know, the old saying, the greatest lie is the devil doesn't exist. Well, when we actually start looking at these lies, they're equally as evil, that the government has these powers. They don't. Anyway, okay, so now we're on 15, and as we look at 15, we get into some red highlights and so forth. Now, the important part about 15 is this is where Madison actually breaks down the word states. And he gives you these different usages that he could be, you know, one could infer this type of usage of states. And then one could infer this type of usage of states. or this type of usage. But basically, then he goes in, you know, in ultimately what we were saying in using states is this, because he's talking about states plural. And, you know, he actually, this one paragraph becomes pages in Madison's notes on nullification, because he's trying to emphatically help people understand that these sovereign states, the states of not just this sovereign capital, but all of the people and the resources that made that government legitimate, each of those states are being brought to the table here. And so let's kind of go through how he amplifies the importance of the word states. Go ahead.
The other position involved in this branch of the resolution, namely the states that are parties to the Constitution or compact, is, in the judgment of the committee, equally free from objection. It is indeed true that the term states is sometimes used in a vague sense and sometimes in different senses, according to the subject to which it is applied. Thus, it sometimes means the separate sections of territory occupied by the political societies within each, sometimes the particular governments established by those societies, sometimes those societies as organized into those particular governments.
Okay, so he's given us three examples of using the word states. And now he actually goes into what he really was implying and what was inferred. Go ahead.
And lastly, it means the people composing those political societies in their highest sovereign capacity. Although it might be wished that the perfection of language admitted less diversity in the signification of the same words, yet little inconvenience is produced by it, where the true sense can be collected with certainty from the different applications.
There you go. Okay, so we're not even done, but what he's basically saying is, you know, he kind of wished that the English, it took this long paragraph, or I should say that several lines, to basically say, you know, we have a language that's a little bit cumbersome because, you know, there's this vagueness to the words and what it means and what are you inferring. And it'd be nice if we actually had, you know, a more clear-cut way of communicating this. But anyway, so because of the different applications. Okay, go ahead.
In the present instance, whatever different construction of the term states in the resolution may have been entertained, all will at least concur in the last mention, because in that sense, the Constitution was submitted to the states. In that sense, the states ratified it. In that sense of the term states, they are consequently parties to the compact from which the powers of the federal government result.
Okay, that's huge. Because as they ratified the Constitution, they basically stepped into this union as a party to the compact. And so he's going to now go into what does it mean to be a party in a compact. So he's actually giving us these fundamental tenets of contract law. And when we look at the states themselves, we kind of look at the, you know, the state as a single entity and a single sovereign, but the state itself is composed of not just people, but governments that the people created, we call counties. In other words, the state is a republican form of government of multiple counties creating a general government to serve the counties, just like the federal government. I have for years referred to our republic as a hybrid constitutional republic. I want you to understand this, folks, that we aren't a simple constitutional republic. We're going into a break right here. We're not a simple constitutional republic. What we are is a hybrid because we have the national, where all the states have joined into a union of a confederation of states, where that in itself is a republic. And then within each state, the counties created those states, and now that in itself is a self-sustained republic. We'll be right back after this.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so didn't know I had a hot mic. Sorry for the cough. So as I was going into the break, I'm kind of explaining to you folks this hybrid constitutional republic. When we create a government, that government is actually sovereign over those things delegated. And so from the federal government, even though we started at the federal government, that is not the foundation of our government. It's only a general government that serves the states. Now, within the states, that becomes a general government that serves the counties. And in some areas, your county should have, you know, a republic within it. Because you've created so many people and so many different functions, like New York, L.A., Chicago, those should be their own little republic, where they break down their that area, that county, and say, okay, this is a district and this is a district, and therefore these physical geography districts that are within that county actually become the body government in creating a constitution for the district and then creating a constitution for the county. We should, every time we go down and create subdivisions, we the people need to basically sanctify that by actually setting aside the powers we want our government to have. And I'm telling you, folks, the last thing you want to do is you want to give the repository of all the powers to that general government at the farthest level away from you, i.e. the federal government. The government we want to trust is the government. You can actually walk out your house and be in front of those legislators, because we actually have three branches of government in our governing power. We took the magistrate and divided it into three separate branches. And the most powerful, the one that we have to get in the grill with, is our representatives. Yeah, they're not executives. They're not. They can't make themselves into kings and princesses or queens and princesses. They are our representatives. They're the ones that create the law. They're the ones that can actually make us miserable. The executive, by the framework of this constitutional design, the executive can only enforce those laws that are legitimate. If he actually allows and enforces laws that aren't legitimate, so anyway, the point is this, folks, we actually have a hybrid that it keeps on going down and down and down. As if you want to create that type of clarity in how you wish to be governed. And what ends up happening when you have a city like L.A. or maybe Seattle, but Seattle and San Francisco are kind of unique, because they may be a part of a bigger county, but they're unique just due to the fact that they're this landlocked mass of land. In other words, both San Francisco and Seattle are kind of, you know, landlocked between water. And so they can't spread into the water, so they basically go north and south.
And so it would be best to actually, you know, take that city and make it its own little county. And then let that city actually start breaking up its boroughs or its communities that made up that city, which in the old days, those boroughs used to be cities, right? Like New York, Brooklyn, Queens, and so forth. I mean, those there were actual cities that now comprise of New York. Or the same thing with, what is it? I'm just trying to think of some of the places in LA County that, I've been there, Covina, West Covina. I spent way too much time in SoCal, but I was just, when you look at all of the different cities that basically got consumed by Los Angeles, these communities become a part of the whole. And so Los Angeles, if you look at Los Angeles and its county, the city of Los Angeles does not make up the entirety of that county. And so people would probably want to actually, decide whether they want to be a part of the Los Angeles county or not. And I'm going to tell you, people up in Thousand Oaks, they probably don't. And as you start, looking at, because they're a unique community. They don't want to be dragged down by the socialists that are destroying LA.
Yeah.
People, we have a right to self-govern ourselves. If you don't want to be a part of that county, then you can divide your county. This is where we actually need to start thinking about our Republican form of government. Because when New York and Los Angeles and Chicago and these big cities create their own little county, then they themselves actually have to create little count or constitutions for these subdivisions before they create their own county constitution. Because at that point, that county government is going to be a general government because people want to have the power closest to them. The state government becomes a general government when we reframe the state constitution. In other words, as all of the counties create their constitutions and the people acknowledge that we need to have a road system, then they should be delegating to that state to basically support and, create standards and so forth for the road system. You want to be careful how much power you give them in, the road system. And so because you don't want them to all of a sudden start using eminent domain and, destroying and actually targeting, people or what have you to say, we're taking your land. So, folks, we need to be a little bit cautious, or at least we need to be diligent in understanding the ramifications of delegating power. The reason we have limited and defined government, unlike every nation in the world, is because the framers didn't trust centralized power. They wanted to make sure that they only gave them what they needed, and I'm telling you, they did such a great job because the divine hand of providence inspired them and gave them the insights of doing exactly what they did. So there's no reason why we can't do those same things. And oh, by the way, you screw it up. Okay, you're going to have to you have to suffer the slings and arrows of the consequences of you ruining or messing it up. And then you get a chance to do it all over again. So if you actually try to give your county too much power, and all of a sudden, because they want to give everybody everything and they basically, the people have to revolt and basically call another constitutional convention to reel back that county. Say, you know what? You're not going to do all of those things because you actually started. If we look at how the federal government is actually waging warfare against the states and the people today, folks, I am not speaking in hyperbole. They are literally waging warfare tactics. If they were doing what they're doing to the states and the people today, to other nations, those nations would legitimately be able to point to these things as war. You are attacking us by spraying that crap on our land and people. You're attacking us by actually, you know, manipulating our markets, our economic markets, and or our currencies. That is economic warfare, chemical warfare. There are all different types of warfare tactics. It's not just tanks and guns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if a county started doing that, then the people would wake up and say, look, we're done with this. We're going to reframe that constitution. And we're taking back these powers. We're taking back all these benefits you've given yourselves. We never authorized you to do all of these things. Or if we did, shame on us. We're peeling them back now. Because bottom line, when we went through the Constitutional Conventions, or I should say the Ratification Conventions in ratifying the Constitution, we also went through the Constitutional Convention as well, but we went through all of these things this year, all of them. And when we did this, we proved to you that the people have the power. The source of political power in America is the people. But we exert that power in our constitutions. And then we actually have to maintain diligence in holding the public servants accountable to that constitution. Okay, so the guys that wrote the federal constitution lived hundreds of years ago. And the brilliance that they put into that is just overwhelming. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, the only way we can actually hold them accountable, the only way, is for us to actually understand that Constitution, how those powers were discussed and defined. And this is the service we're giving you. I'm hoping you're recognizing that the things you really need, America, the things you need is you need to understand that Constitution and how it was defined. Well, where do you find that? You find that in the ratification debates. And in so doing, you now understand what every line and every single part of the Constitution means. Why? Because they went through every line. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, you know, you can read the Ten Commandments, but that doesn't mean you really understand them. You have to read the Scriptures. And see, any Christian out there would actually shake, oh, yeah, that's absolutely true. You don't just need the Ten Commandments. You need the Scriptures as well. And every Christian understands the importance of the Scriptures. The ratification debates are the Scriptures for the Constitution in a government sense. It's that simple. Understanding the Constitutional Convention is actually helpful because that's how they actually understood, because they were the ones that drafted it. So that when they went into these debates, these men, and interestingly enough, some of the people in these debates, like George Mason, became an anti-federalist. He participated in the Constitutional Convention, but he became an opponent to it instead of being a proponent. So he was speaking out against it. And there were many times where he conceded that the exclusive legislation did not grant them power to pervert the Constitution. It was only a power given them to actually be able to run and police the land of the seat of government so that they could have their own law and order, but they could not pervert the federal government. And so he conceded to that point that they couldn't mess with, they couldn't create corporations. And when we look at, when we go through the Organic Act, because I'm on an aside here, when we go through the Organic Act in the next few weeks, folks, you're going to realize that the Organic Act created a foundation. But you're not going to find the real things that were important to know or what they were actually doing with these things. First off, the federal government could not create a corporation. And what they were doing was they were basically transitioning the District of Columbia into this territory and elevating it into status to where they were giving themselves the ability to have electors and so forth. They did this long before the constitutional amendment came along. And yeah. So when we go through this, you're going to actually see that it's not really heaven parting where we actually say, aha, see here. But bottom line is we do and we can prove that what they did in that act was create a government that they had no authority to create. In other words, when you look at the exclusive legislation, whose responsibility was it to actually control every aspect of the government? Congress. If Congress was going to create a mini Congress and delegate power to that, then they would have had to amend that exclusive legislation to say that they have exclusive legislation to grant that away from themselves to another governing body would require an amendment to the exclusive legislation clause. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll prove what they did was the first step, and that's the aha. And down the road, they started creating other things like the treaty with Britain and so forth. But anyway, that's for the future. What we're covering now, getting back to this, we're in the report. And so let's go ahead and read 16, because he just explained the states and how important understanding what that word meant. So go ahead with 16.
The next position is that the General Assembly views the powers of the federal government as limited by the plain sense and intention of the instrument constituting that compact, and as no further valid than they are authorized by the grants therein enumerated. It does not seem possible that any just objection can lie against either of these clauses. The first amounts merely to a declaration that the compact ought to have the interpretation plainly intended by the parties to it. The other to a declaration that it ought to have the execution and effect intended by them. If the powers granted be valid, it is solely because they are granted. And if the granted powers are valid because granted, all other powers not granted must not be valid.
It's kind of like a common sense position. Now, folks, let me just say this. And I'll just, you know, because I've been meaning to say this and I keep on forgetting, but there's these little quotations that Tammy just read. Got to understand that, you know, these were quotations that were coming out of the resolutions, the Virginia resolutions. When you see these quotations, in some essences, like with the states, he's quoting that. That's kind of more of a highlight focus, states being applied in the resolutions. But these quotations of these phrases or these sentences, they're deliberately out of, and he's injecting the specific language of the resolutions. His point here in this whole document is to help them understand what those resolutions were really saying and what they were doing. And so this whole point here is he's going through this to say, bottom line, you know, and reiterating in a way that, hey, there are delegations. One of the things that I'm pointing out in my new article is that when you really look at the Constitution, everything in it is a delegation. There are roles and responsibilities that are being delegated, not just to the federal government. The states have responsibilities in that Constitution, such as the Electoral College, that the states have to do this on by this certain time, they have to do that, blah, blah, blah. So the Constitution is, in a way, of, I don't want to say it's a complex document. All you have to do is, and this is why I've started creating this new color-coded Constitution, so that I can actually use a color of text with a highlight so that you get this combination of a highlight and a colored text that explains that is a federal role or responsibility. This one, and I haven't finished this, what we have up there is just a rough draft, and there's problems with it. But we're doing this so that you can start seeing that when you're looking at the document and you're actually understanding what the enumerations are, that that's a role that is enumerated. To be clear, The only thing that Congress can create laws that are legitimate laws are those things that are enumerated within the powers. In other words, Article 1, Section 8, those are the things that they can create laws regarding. Can they create a law regarding something else within the Constitution, such as a role, a standard, a criminal jurisdiction? No. If something is going to change a responsibility, such as they are, you know, a representative in the House of Representatives will represent no more than 30,000 people, whatever that is. Now, they can actually delineate what that 30,000 is because the Constitution didn't provide it. Now, technically, out the gate, how they define that was and should be actually what we live by. And that was kind of left because they didn't identify it in the Constitution. And so as they identified it in the ratification debates, that literally included people, which is why blacks were included into that apportionment of 30,000. Therefore, slaves, that meant all people that were citizens or adults. It didn't include children. In other words, if you were not counted as a person, as, you know, I don't believe it included children. It may have, but we'd have to actually break into it and find out how they delineated it. Because bottom line, however they delineated it, doesn't matter what I think, however they delineated is how we have to move forward. That's exactly what he's saying here. However it was delineated, however that contract was defined at the very beginning, you can't change that because these were the accepted terms and conditions of every part of that Constitution. The only way you can change those things that are unchangeable, like the apportionment, or the standards for a representative. You must be 25 and a citizen for 7 years. Guess what? That same application goes on to electors. And I've actually seen states appointing an 18-year-old an elector. Now, when did that 18-year-old become a, help me out here. When did that 18-year-old actually become 25? 7 years later. But I've seen the parties because, oh, we got young kids. And it's a reward to get more young kids to join. In other words, the parties are actually violating the Electoral College Clause because what is the standards for the Electoral College? Tammy, do you know off the top of your head?
Well, age 21.
No, it's actually the same standards as a representative in the House of Representatives. You have to be 25 years of age, and you have to be a citizen for 7 years. So how is an 18-year-old a legitimate elector if the Constitution states that he has to be 25?
And who's making 18-year-olds electors?
The parties. So when you go to a convention, I actually attended a convention where they had a high school graduate because he, you know, he was very ambitious and very active in the party. They basically awarded him the privilege of being an elector.
What state is that in?
I don't want to say.
Oh, okay.
But the problem is that, and which party was it? Because then it becomes, you know, well, I don't want to be the hypocrite, but the problem is nobody's actually examining these standards. They don't even realize, oh, there's a standard? I didn't know that. When you don't know the Constitution, you'd be surprised that there's actually these rules that you have to abide by, such as the Electoral College. The Electoral College is not something the party can control. If the party is going to control and they're going to have primaries and they're going to be able to down-select a person from the general election from being able to become a representative for the people of their good congressional district or a senator of the state, then you actually have to have that language in the Constitution that the states may do that. But the Constitution does not state that the states and the parties can actually down-select and play these games. Does that make sense? In other words, if you want to start doing something and changing processes for something that is actually delineated in the Constitution, such as the eligibility for a representative in the House and eligibility for a senator and what it takes for them to actually go to the election, you play these games to keep them from actually making it to the general election, then you're violating the Constitution. The parties are big and violating. So, again, what he's doing is he's really delineating that if the power is not delegated or if the enumeration isn't followed, then you're violating the Constitution. It's not just the powers. This is why it's really important to understand every enumeration in the Constitution, which is why I went down this rabbit hole. So forgive me. So let's go ahead. We got 2.5 minutes. Let's read this 17.
The resolution, having taken this view of the federal compact, proceeds to infer that in case of a deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states who are parties thereto have the right and are in duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them.
Okay, so folks, most all of that was a quotation. So in other words, quote, that in case of deliberate, palpable, and dangerous exercise of other powers not granted by the said compact, the states or the parties thereto have the right and are duty-bound. Now, you know, it's not that they just have this right. They have to interpose for arresting the progress of the evil and for maintaining within their respective limits the authorities, rights, and liberties appertaining to them. Folks, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment changes what these words mean. Not only are you responsible, but if you don't interpose, you are now just as guilty as those who are violating the Constitution. Because at that point in time, they did not have Section 3. He was basically saying, we're all duty-bound. You have to do it. There's no consequences if you don't. And so these other states, actually, had they had Section 3, then Virginia and Kentucky could have gone to these other states going, you're all in violation, and technically you need to be removed. Because you fail to support the Constitution because you are duty-bound, as he's pointing. You are responsible of it holding government accountable. The supreme law of the land demands it. See? And so that really, I think that really helps people understand that this isn't just some casual support. You know, like a supporting wall. I'll always use that reference. A supporting wall just stands there. It doesn't run around the house and make sure that everything is, you know, properly held to the right, you know, elevation. It serves a very passive support. When we have public servants, they are an active support, like our immune system, running around attacking the foreign bodies and getting rid of them, or these aberrations that don't belong. They work to get rid of. Now, thank you for joining us, Tammy. Folks, as we move forward, when we get into these next paragraphs, we're going to painstakingly go through, because this is the juiciest, meatiest part of Madison's report coming up. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description
of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flow chart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.